I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all things.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, as usual, we're going to have a show jam-packed with lots of information. We're going to be talking about our spiritual heritage and our star family, a theory about human origins, and a few tidbits here and there of information that I'm kind of hoping most of our audience has not heard before. And before we get to all that, we're going to kick things off in our usual way, by hearing the Hari Om mantra meditation. So if the guys in the booth will play that now, that'd be great.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari, Hari, Hari.
Hari, Hari, Hari.
Om.
Hari Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Hari Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Satchidananda, founder of the Yoga Institutes, the Integral Yoga Institutes. and one of my spiritual teachers. For those that are new to ET Yoga, I go back to the old days of Baba Ram Das. I was also involved with the International Meditation Society. Spent a couple of years learning from the Self-Realization Fellowship founded by Paramahansa Yogananda. And then a couple of decades following Sri Swami Sachidananda. And then I got involved with the extraterrestrial information that I find so much enhances the yogic teachings. And most specifically in the areas of personal self-empowerment, I find much of the information that's come to the planet has been very helpful with respect to people on a daily basis, both in terms of philosophy and in terms of practical information. And I'd like now to give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and all thought, though thought to be accurate, is provided as is, and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And I should also point out that another one of my spiritual teachers was Sri Ramana Maharshi. In fact, it was his Achara, or the Who Am I technique, that really expanded my vision in terms of yogic teachings and personal experiences of other planes of existence. And I should also state that it was, back in, I guess it was the mid-70s when Barbara Marciniak first came out with Bringers of the Dawn. I was actually given a copy of that book by one of the people, Madhuri Honeyman from the Integral Yoga Institute. It was my first exposure, actually, to extraterrestrial information. And it was shortly after then that I had some close encounters with UFOs. And also came across the book UFO from the Pleiades. That's the whole Billy Meyer story. And if you're not familiar with the Billy Meyer story, wow, that's one I think you really got to check out. I mean, there's been a lot of people try to discredit Billy over the years, but I know there's lots of positive sources that concur with me that his experience was valid. And he's got probably the best pictures of craft that's out there. And not only the craft, but that particular book, UFO from the Pleiades, has got tons of information in it that's held up over the course of several decades. And one of the chief bits of information in that particular book was that the human species came from the Lyra constellation, and thus our connection with the Lyrans. And I'm going to be talking tonight about a couple of different theories concerning our spiritual heritage. And of course, for those of you that are really up to date and kind of following along with different extraterrestrial groups and the main players that are involved with our scenario on Earth, would have an interest in the Alpha Draconians. And it's interesting to note that Alex Collier, the Andromedan contactee, had mentioned that according to the Andromedans, the Alpha Draconians don't know where they came from. And I found that quite interesting. There are some theories out there that maybe they came from a different universe and kind of got plopped down here. But I've recently come across some information that I certainly resonate with. And it's a different slant, and it's confirmed both by Lisa Royale and Jalayla Starr, who is a representative of the Nairobian Council. And I'm going to be getting into some of those theories because another guy that I kind of consider has lots of good information is Dan Winter. And according to Dan Winter, among other aspects that the Alpha Draconians have lost, was their ability to have long-term memory. So maybe it's possible that some of the theories I'm going to be talking about tonight are true, because maybe even the Alpha Draconians don't know where they came from, but other star people do. And so I'm going to be getting into some of that information. And also, just to be fair, Stuart Swerdlow, who apparently had worked in the Montauk projects, stated that once he spoke to a Draconian, and the Draconian said that it came from the far future where humans no longer existed, and that its species was not from this reality. And continuing, it said that its species had traveled back into the distant past to create a race of beings, which we know as the reptilians, and this was to antagonize and test humans. And so that would be consistent with what the Andromedan information is. So I guess in one sense, whether the theories that I'm going to be discussing next are true or not, the actual effect is the same, because there may be some different speculations as to their original origins, but clearly... they have certainly become the antagonists in the human drama. And I also came across some other interesting information that was from selected excerpts from Blue Blood, True Blood, and that's from Stuart Swerdlow, and that's selected excerpts from Blue Blood, True Blood. And in this information, it stated that human genetics were united with those of the wild boar to create the domesticated pig. And I'm not too sure how many people are aware of that one. I've come across this now in about two or three different other places as well that I consider from good sources. So in a sense, eating a pig is a form of cannibalism. And it also explains why the Hebrews considered it unclean to eat. I always kind of wondered about that. And it's also why pigs pig skin can be grafted directly onto humans in burn cases, and also why pig heart valves can be used in humans with little difficulty. So it kind of connects the dots there in a couple of ways. And apparently part of the reasoning around this was to kind of make a less obvious form of food available to the Alpha Draconians, thus kind of tied them over in between getting actual human flesh. And I find, as with most sources, there is certainly some information with respect to Swerdlaw information that mostly concerning predictions, but then again, not many people out there are very good at predictions. Even if we go back into Alex Collier's early days and some of the predictions that were made, a lot of things didn't come to pass. I guess we could say the same thing even about Edgar Cayce. So even though people can be highly, highly accurate, doesn't mean that everything they say is going to come about. And this also kind of touches upon the point of what I call disinformation, where there's also a lot of disinformation out there, and that, by my definition, is intentionally giving false information, usually sandwiched in between a couple of truths. And thus, when people start off, they're going to say all the kind of things that you want to hear and or that are true or that we feel is objectively true. And thus gain your confidence, and then they slip in their own agenda and then sandwich that in with some more truth to kind of make a nice sandwich out of it. And to be honest, I think there's so much disinformation out there that it's very, very difficult for people to get really accurate information. And certainly that's part of the powers that are controlling the planet, part of their ability, which is very excellent with respect to infiltrating certain spiritual groups, and as well, obviously, they have a lot of people working on this area. And so to kind of continue with my story, that our spiritual heritage to me and our star family is quite important, because it's almost like an orphan not knowing who their parents are. And from what I resonate with, we were intended to have a 12-strand DNA and a 12-chakra system. And much of that had been sort of disconnected by certain reptilian groups over the course of time. And as I understand it, each of the 12 strands of DNA was given to us from different star groups, which would be our star family. Although there's never, well, I wouldn't say never, because I'm not aware of everything that's written out there, but I certainly can't find any list of those 12 groups. But I'm going to take a shot at guessing who those are, just from, I don't know, my own intuitiveness, I guess. And certainly, I've always resonated with the information, as I stated, from the UFO from the Pleiades, the Billy Meyer information, and Semjaze, which was one of his initial first contacts, who stated about us coming from the Lyra constellation. And apparently, the Lyrans grew into the Sirians and the Arcturians and the Antarians and the Pleiadians and the Andromedans and Cygnus Alphon and Alpha Centauri and Sagittarius A and B and Cassiopeia. And I can throw in there the Aldebarans and the Procyons. And according to Dan Winter, even when they were, when the Anunnaki were messing with our DNA, apparently some Ptah DNA got thrown in there as well. So as I was reading in this True Blood information, I also came across the confirmation that some of these call them guesses, have in fact been supported in certain ways, because the Sumerians were apparently like 50-50 human and reptilian. So I'm going to include reptilian on my list of DNA. And the Sirians were certainly connected with the ancient Egyptian culture, and the Tau Ceti were involved with the Slavic culture in Eastern Europe. The Rigelians were very busy in China and the Orient, including Japan. The Antarians were connected to Greece, specifically ancient Greece. More recently, the Aldebarans were connected with Central Europe, especially Germany, and especially Nazi Germany, and giving them some technological advances. And we have the Procyons were connected with the Maya, the Aztec, and the Inca civilizations. And I also thought it was fascinating that the Arcturians were very influential in Italy. And certainly when we think about the Italian culture and their wonderful art and their cool style of culture, I can see an Arcturian flavor there. So I find that all these connections would tend to indicate that this particular group of Lyrans, Syrians, Arcturian, Antarian, Pleiadian, Andromedan, Cygnus Alphani, the Alpha Centauri, Sagittarius A and B, Cassiopeia, Aldebarans, Procyons, Fatal, and Reptilian. It's a pretty good guess as to our star family. And there's pretty high probability that I might be out on one or two of these, but probably pretty close. And I always like to simplify things down with respect to the human chakra system, as agreeing with Pleiadian information that we are dealing with a 12 chakra system and 12 strands of DNA as our potential. Now, with respect to this galactic history, there are two races called the Carrions and the Felines that both Lisa Royale and the information from the Nairobian Council definitely concur with respect to their existence. And so I'm going to share with you some information galactic history-wise that that has a high probability of being so. That the Carrions, and that C-A-R-I-A-N-S, are a rare race of bird-like beings. And at their most evolved state, the ruling class of the Carrions resemble humans with eagle-like features and coloring. And like the original felines, and that's F-E-L-I-N-E-S, the felines, the Carrions first arrived in this universe when it was being created. And a group of 45 came at the request of the founders of this universe to help assist and oversee the universal game. The founders gave the Carrions a new planet in the Orion constellation for their home, and it was more tropical in design and featured an abundance of humid swamps and jungles. It also had more islands than large landmasses. Like the felines, they were etheric, and therefore had to develop physical bodies from the life forms evolving on the planet's surface. Of course, they chose the life form that would become the bird, and over a period of hundreds of thousands of years, they developed bodies of varying colors and different styles. And the Carrions were known for their unique affinity towards colored plumage, and so created physical bodies that reflected their creative talent in this area. And this is why the Carrions have much more variety of size, shape, and color in their race than do the felines. And they can be 12 feet tall or only a few inches in height. And also like the felines, a group of the original 45 Carrions remained etheric and became a council that oversaw and managed the development of their brothers and sisters who chose to incarnate on the planet as part of the upgrading of their physical forms. And when the physical vehicles had reached a certain level of development, they began genetic crossing, something they had learned from the felines, with certain reptiles that had evolved in the swamps and warmer regions of the planet. The result of this genetic program was the creation of a new hybrid race known to us as the Draconians. And they were part carrion and part reptile. And in time, the Draconian became more abundant in the royal line of Aln, and that's A-L-N, than the purebred carrions. And like the felines, eventually the House of Aln would be peopled more by Draconians, and their first derivatives, the flying serpents, snakes, and the snakes, then the carrions. And by the time of the first Earth grand experiment, the House of Aln was headed by a winged serpent known as Kobazar. Kobazar is the father of Jehovah. And carrions are known for their sharp analytical ability and organizational skills. A predominant characteristic trait of the carrions is their need to maintain a good appearance and image at all times. They are good team players as long as the team structure involves discipline and strictly adhere to codes of conduct. And you'll find a preponderance of carrions involved in the creation and maintenance of stargates, dimensional grids, and magnetic fields throughout our galaxy and universe. And their inherent analytical abilities make them well suited for this kind of work. They're also known for their militaristic capabilities, and their starships are more advanced than any in the universe. They held the majority of the military posts during the first Earth grand experiment, and it was a carrion commander that ruled over the vast fleet of starships and cruisers for the Lyran Galactic Federation and the Royal House of Avion and Aln. And the reptilians were the creation of the carrions, bird-headed beings. So that's their parent race. And they evolved in the Alpha Draconian star system and of the Orion constellation. And the royal line of the reptilians are the Draconians, or winged dragons, from the house of El, that's E-L. Reptiles have two major subraces, winged serpents, snakes, and lizards, which sometimes are called by the Pleiadians the Lizzies. Reptilians have a highly sophisticated knowledge of universal law and are allegedly responsible for the mystery school teachings on Earth. The reptilians allegedly were given a creational agenda by the carrions, and they were to move through the universe and destroy any existing civilization they found along the way, recruiting new DNA codes and entities following those codes. And certainly there was a story about the Lyran constellation, and the story goes that one day a Draconian ship showed up orbiting one of the planets there, and some sort of misunderstanding took place, and eventually three planets were blown up. So it certainly fits their original purpose. And apparently it was part of the master plan, a universal game, polarity, called Polarity Integration, reality in conflict, an experiment in emotions resulting in soul evolution, and at the end of the cycles of its existence was certainly meant to be very positive with respect to soul evolution. Now, the felines are a bipedal race that stand 12 to 15 feet tall, and their skin is covered by a sort of soft fuzz, and though they don't have fur, they do have manes, and both the males and females have long hair. The overall feline temperament is warm, sanguine, and intellectual, and as a race, they are extremely close and have a great sense of fair play. The females are revered and honored in equal status as the males. And true to the feline way, they are all very curious and inquisitive. As part of the universal game, the founders gave the felines a new planet in the Lyra constellation for their home. The felines named it Avion. This is not the exact pronunciation or spelling, but it is close enough. The real name cannot be translated into English. Avion was a paradise planet with mountains, lakes, streams, and oceans. The blue planet was much like the Earth in form and variety of vegetation and life forms. And as part of the plan, a portion of the original felines stayed in the etheric form to provide guidance for those incarnating. They went through the stage of evolving a physical body in which to reside on the planet. And after many millions of years, they evolved. And as time passed, they evolved a line of felines that walked upright and retained the consciousness of their etheric counterparts thanks to the periodic incarnations of some of the etheric felines and DNA from a bipedal mammal similar to the ape that was evolving on the planet as well. With the DNA from the ape-like mammal, the felines were able to take on a more human-like body. This became the genetic line known as the Royal Line of Avion, or House of Avion. Then the felines began a program of genetic crossing and upgrading that would give them a soul, and in the process create a new species that would become known as the humans. After numerous crossings and genetic upgrades, the Adamic human was made. In time, the purebred felines would become the ancient ancestors of the humans. And although the genetic relationship between the felines and humans has been forgotten by modern man, the felines remain in our consciousness as a regal creature worthy of our respect and love. The felines remain the loving and supportive guardians of their genetic offspring, the humans, and they have continued in this role through time and all dimensions of the universal game. So that's a history that I find is quite interesting, because I know we do hear lots of discussion with respect to the Zechariah Sitchin finds that indicate that it was the Anunnaki that created the modern form of human. And actually, there's several people out there that think that some of the tabloids that Zechariah Sitchin found were actually tampered with, because it's the Alpha Draconians that would like us all to believe that they were the creators of man, which is not so, especially according to my previous comments here. So in point of fact, it would be the felines that humanity could trace their origins to. Now, with respect to getting into a place where we can find out if that's true or not, I really would suggest this whole concept around the Akashic Record. And Teal Swan, I believe, has some of the best information concerning the Akashic Record. And that, according to Teal, what we're going to speak to the brain about is Akashic Records. And the Akashic Record are a symbolic representation that the brain uses to represent the fact that every thought which has ever been thought exists. The Akashic Records is the collective consciousness. It has been referred to as the mind of God, which as such happens to contain the information on the energetic vibration of every thought which has ever been thought in any and all universes that have ever been. And since the first division of oneness or source, it also contains a bit of future. What is meant by a bit of future is from where you stand right now, you have paths of probability which extend past your lifetime. And the future is always a vibrational match to the present. And so if you change a thought in the present, the future paths change. So what exists in the Akashic Record relative to the future is just probabilities which stem from your current vibration right where you stand in your life at this very moment. When we in human consciousness often think of this storage of thoughts, we associate with a library because that's what we in our human lifespans see as a collection of information. So often when people visit these nonlinear dimensions, the experience of being there is being pulled into linear understanding. So that which is not linear is being formatted in a linear way by the brain when you come back into third-dimensional reality. So it's a linear understanding upon re-entry into third-dimensional consciousness. And the entire experience is interpreted as sorting through records or images, so an image library of sorts. For the sake of the brain and explaining Akashic record, it behooves us to go into the understanding of dimensions. Dimensions are divided in terms of vibration, and they are not a spatial concept. It's our brain which is meant to deal with space and time, meant to format wave function to space and time. That is really telling us that dimensions are existing anywhere other than in the now. In reality, all dimensions exist on top of one another in the same space. They're just different vibrations overlapped one on the other. So you are existing on all dimensions at all times. And in Thiel's opinion, the Akashic records don't represent one dimension. Information is stored on the dimension which it corresponds to. So you can think of the entire Akashic record as a giant library, and let's say that this library is Source. So right now you're probably thinking of this library as a building. That's because the brain can't understand the concept of no beginning and no end, and it can't understand the concept of no borders. But we have to give the brain something to latch onto. So let's call Source the library. That's the ultimate dimension. All the dimensions within this library could be seen as different levels within a library. Just like when you go to a library, there's floor 1, floor 2, floor 3, etc. The different dimensions could be seen as these levels in the library, and there's different information relative to each level. So each successive floor in this library is more expansive than the floor below it. So each successive floor contains all the information in the floors below it, including new information relative to the expansion or the expansive totality of unity consciousness. Accessing the Akashic records has to do with you increasing your vibratory rate so as to be a match to the floor, and then the next floor, and then the next floor, and so on. As for example, in the fourth dimension, which is the one just outside the third dimension, we have access to every thought which has ever been thought relative to this single lifetime from your birth to your death. It also contains your thought form, which is basically the energetic self concept you have of you, which is why when you get out of body in the fourth dimension, you'll experience your energy body, which is an energy duplicate. It's an energy duplicate of the third dimension, but it contains every thought which has ever been thought relative to your one lifespan. This third dimension is moment to moment. Our brains can conceptualize of the fourth dimension. That's why we have any concept of time. But the third dimension reality is a moment to moment reality, meaning that all that exists is now and now and now and now. So in the fifth dimension, every possible timeline from the simple points that you've chosen for your third dimensional life exists in the movie Sliding Doors, where a woman experienced missing a train. So the movie takes off in two different probability paths. In one probability path, she makes this train, and her life changes accordingly. And in the other one, she misses the train, and her life continues along this path accordingly. So in the fifth dimension, you have all the timelines which are possible for this single path you have chosen from any point in your life. So that means not just from where you stand right now, but also all the probability paths which exist since you were born. As you can imagine, this is a huge totality of information, and the third dimensional brain has absolutely no way of formatting this for you in an understandable way. So within the timeline from your one birth to your one death, a fifth dimension contains all possibilities within that one path. you're collapsing the waves of probability in the fifth dimension into a fourth dimensional timeline. That is what you're doing to form your concept of your one life and the one path which has been taken by your physical life. In the sixth dimension, you are unlimited by space and time, and so you can instantly experience a new timeline within that fifth dimension from any of the probabilities in the fifth dimension. So instantly, you could switch to the outcome of what would have occurred if something back in your infancy had been totally radically changed. So if one of the possibility paths that you didn't end up taking from a point, to say you were six months old, you could choose that all the way to the end and instantly experience the end result of that particular probability path. In the seventh dimension, the sixth dimension is treated almost like a single point. So there is no timeline anymore. The sixth dimension is one point where all possibilities in terms of timelines in our universe and all possible endings for our universe are contained. They are contained in the single point called infinity. So all possible timelines which could have or will have occurred since the birth of the universe, and since the Big Bang, they're all contained in the seventh dimension. So every thought that's ever been thought relative to this universe is contained in the seventh dimension. So how could there be more than infinity? Well, the answer is there can be other infinities, other universes created under different conditions. And when other universes are created under different conditions, these are different laws which apply to that universe. So different laws and laws other than the law of gravity. So in these other universes and other infinities, the laws are not the same. The basic laws are not the same because the initial conditions creating those universes also aren't the same. So in the eighth dimension, that's where you begin to have access to the infinity relative to the lifetime of this universe as it relates to the infinity of another universe or other universes. And in the ninth dimension, you have access to being able to instantly experience any probability path from any timeline of being in any universe instantaneously. In the tenth dimension, which is the top level of the library, what you're going to be experiencing with the tenth dimension is all probabilities of all universes in the ninth dimension, and all of those probabilities of all those universes in the ninth dimension are treated now as a single point. And to go higher, instead of being the levels within the library, we are now the library itself. And this is hard for the brain to conceptualize, but when we are outside the 10th dimension beyond, you are entering the zero point field. So in the 10th dimension, all universes from the 9th dimension are treated as a single point. And past the 10th dimension, you don't even have a point. And I kind of relate that to the Ramana Maharshi's Who Am I technique, where you go from the spot, I, and then I'm not my body, I'm not my internal organs, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not this spot, what spot? Because now you're going through the 10th dimension. It says past the 10th dimension, you don't even have a point or a spot. What you have is this zero point field, which is a sea of probability waves, which we would call source. And that is the totality of collective consciousness, not the expression of that consciousness. So most people talk of the Akashic Record as seventh dimensional experience. That's the frequencies of where past lives do exist. So most of the people that talk about the Akashic would be talking about seventh dimension. So that would be the totality of probabilities which have occurred from one soul from its origin in this universe and its end in this universe. So it exists as sort of a seventh dimensional energy record. And like anything, you are limited by your beliefs. And most especially when you're talking about the Akashic Record, because you access information in the Akashic Record or these energetic frequencies by becoming a match to those frequencies. So you'd have to, A, believe that they exist, and B, you have to believe that you can get there, and C, you have to structure all of your belief patterns so as to let go of third-dimensional reality in order to be able to match the Akashic Record. And you can access the Akashic Records, and it's a natural byproduct of raising your frequency, which is what all of us on the spiritual world are hoping to do. So I offer this as a possible way to verify information, because clearly some of these ideas and theories about our spiritual origins and our spiritual heritage are contained in the Akashic Record. And most of the people that I hear talking about the Akashic Record, I don't know, sometimes spend thousands of words in explanation about certain things that are going on, but frankly, I find it hard to follow some of their thinking, and it's hard to put the dots together. So I'm tried to simplify that down, and I think Teal Swan has done a really good job of that. And actually, if you look under Teal Swan and Akashic Records and do a Google search, what you're going to find is that she also has some practical advice in a YouTube video with respect to accessing the Akashic, which I think is one of the more direct and simple ways to do this. And I should also note from Edgar Cayce, the famous psychic, that there's other ways of verifying some of this ancient information, too. And one of them is from what's called the Hall of Records, which hold the history of the Earth. And according to him, would be found in the right shoulder of the Sphinx. And this has been clearly marked geometrically. And the three oldest Giza pyramids not only lay on a Fibonacci spiral, but that the opening to the Hall of Records is geometrically marked by the lines which bisect the golden mean rectangle designated by the spiral, and a line extended from the southern face of the middle pyramid. The Sphinx is now under major renovation, and one of the problems with it is that the right shoulder, the area marked by the cross, keeps breaking open. And the Egyptians have been trying to patch it to keep it together. The head is also falling off. About 6 or 7 years ago, Thoth told Drumvala Melchizedek that the head will fall off, and that the neck, there will be found a large golden sphere, which is a time capsule. And the Egyptians are doing everything they can to keep the head and right shoulder from falling off. And according to Drumvalo, through Thoth, Thoth said that everything was set up at a higher level so that the Hall of Records would be discovered before the end of 1990. Now, Drumvalo is not sure if it's happened or not. Thoth said that 48 sets of three people would try to enter the Hall of Records until one of these sets, coming from the west, would open the doorway by making a sound with their voice. And inside there would be a spiral staircase going into an underground room. The Japanese have the technical ability to see this room clearly enough with their instruments and to detect a clay pot in the corner. And there are three channels that go out from this room, and if you know how to read it, the clay pot will tell you where to go and what to do. Thoth said that the three people from the west would enter and go down the right channel, and if you go down the wrong channel, or if you are not the right group of people, you'll die. A real Indiana Jones-type scenario. And if you're one of the chosen three people, you can walk right in without any problem. These three people eventually will come down a long stone hallway, lit on its own with no lights. That is, the air itself would be luminous. And high up in the left side of the wall would be etched 48 sacred geometry drawings. These are the illustrations of the chromosomes of Christ consciousness, the first one being the flower of life. And at the end of the hallway, there is a slight right-hand turn into a large room. sitting on the raised shelves of this room is physical evidence of the existence of civilizations on this planet for the last 5.5 million years. And at the front of the room is a stone. And at the top of the stone, these three people would find something like a photograph, an image of themselves. And beneath the images in the photograph, they would find their names. Not necessarily the names they were given at birth, but their true names. And underneath their names would be a date, which would be that actual day. Originally, Thoth was going to meet these people, but he is now gone. So unless it happened before May 21st, 1991, someone else will meet them. Thoth said that each of these three people will be allowed to remove one of the objects and take it out, and the Hall of Records contained more than physical objects. Under the Sphinx, in the Hall of Records, information is stored on many different dimensional levels. And I find that really kind of fascinating information because according to Bashar, these Hall of Records have been found. And it's been about 2 or 3 years now that Bashar stated that he thought that the probability was that this information at some point would become public. Was very confident about that. And I might note that there's been a couple of other finds that certainly change our whole view of history as well. For example, the Bosnian pyramids, according to the research there, they date back about 35,000 years. And these large man-made ceramic stones, amorphous in shape, have been found in some of the tunnel chambers, and some weighing up to 12 tons. And most are too large to have been transported into the tunnels, and somehow must have been fabricated there. And some of the stones are inscribed with hieroglyphic writings, presumably dating from the Middle Ice Age period. And again, this shatters all concepts of human history. And you can understand why the conventional archaeological community has frowned on this excavation project, because it throws all their carefully assembled theories right out the window. And if you can do your own research there about the Bosnian pyramids. And even more astounding has been, according to Vitaly Goh, and that's G-O-K-H, he believes that there's 144,000 pyramids on the Earth, varying in size and location. And the basic pyramids were grouped in 12 places on all the populated continents, and all pyramids were connected by power channels to other pyramid fields and to the crystal nucleus of the Earth, which controlled the operation of the system. And 12 basic groups of pyramids control, in turn, another 12 smaller groups. And according to Goh, the pyramids were scientific instruments there to control and stabilize the land masses of the planet Earth. And he happens to be the founder of the Crimean pyramids. And interestingly enough, I think that was in about 2002 that they discovered 37 pyramids in Crimea. And, of course, we don't even hear about this in mainstream news, but you can look it up on the Internet. And scientists have been going there for a long time. There's certain frequencies are being emitted from some of these pyramids headed towards the Orion constellation. No coincidence there. And also amazingly, there was actually a skeletal remains of a non-human entity wearing a crown under the foundation of one of these pyramids. I mean, to me, this is like huge, huge news. But again, kind of throws out the window all the theories that we've been told about our history and how things work on this planet. And I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that everything that most everything that we think we know about history is pretty much fabricated. Further evidence to that has been the find in Romania, which is basically in Buzău, Romania, under the rock sphinx there. A holographic history of the Earth was apparently found as well. There's three books out on the subject, one called Transylvania Sunrise, one Transylvania Moonrise, and the third book is called The Secret Parchments. And I've read all three of those books and resonate with a lot of the information there, and it created quite a stir among the Vatican and the U.S. government and Romanian government apparently have worked out some kind of a process with respect to release of information, but I don't know over how long. Maybe it's going to be like the, 50 years from now we're going to hear about it. I don't know. I don't know what their arrangement has been made, but there are people in Romania that do talk about this. And, of course, you can't go and find this underground inside the mountain was detected actually by satellite, chamber where it would appear to be built by giants because the tables and chairs are so large. But there's lots of really fascinating information inside the Buzău, Romania find. But again, all this kind of information is not accessible to the public. However, the Akashic records are certainly accessible to the public. And I find it also interesting that the seventh dimensional level of the Akashic records are where our past lives are. And Bashar also offers a technique. It's called the psychomantium. And the psychomantium is basically sitting in a dim-lit room, probably lit by candlelight, where there's a large mirror. And then you sit so that you can see the mirror, but you're not reflected in the mirror. And through your own intentions, you make intentions with respect to seeing your past lives. And some people apparently are quite effective with this technique. It's called the psychomantium. And it may be that you'd be one of those people that would be successful utilizing that technique. And it's one that you can check out, just as you can check out lots of information and different ways of accessing the Akashic records. So I hope that you came across some a new slant or a new idea or some new information on tonight's program. And I certainly wish you my best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And in our usual manner, we usually close our programs off with the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation that comes from Bashar.
I'd like to share with you the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation. First, you need to get really relaxed, either lying down or sitting comfortably or even standing up, whatever is the most comfortable for you. I then suggest taking a couple of deep breaths and imagine yourself in your perfect place of peace. You haven't a worry in the world and are just relaxing in your perfect place of peace. Then imagine the following. Around the area of your heart or solar plexus, just behind that area, is a bright ball of white light. It is a packet of energy that is your essence. This star that you feel inside yourself, this ball of light, now grows and grows and grows in intensity and gets stronger and stronger and stronger until it bursts forth as a beam of light, a laser-like beam bursting out of the front of you and stretches as far as you can imagine infinity to be. Stretching, stretching out as a beam of light beyond the solar system, beyond the Milky Way galaxy, and beyond, going faster and faster and faster all the way to infinity. But it is also elastic, so as it reaches infinity, it slows down and will stop and turn around, and as a solid beam, it will creep back towards you from the far reaches of infinity. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until it comes crashing through the center of your body and through you and out your back and all the way to infinity out the back. All the way out, further, further, until it reaches infinity and it returns, but a little faster now. And faster and faster and faster until it too crashes through you out the front all the way to infinity, but it returns even faster now out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front, back and forth, 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 and out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and let yourself get used to this idea. And then when it gets right in the middle of your body, it crashes out the left side all the way to infinity and back out the right side all the way to infinity and turns and comes back through the center, out the left side and back out the right side and side to side and side to side and front and back 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 until you get used to the idea. And then you have created an X and Y axis. Now another beam goes crashing through your head up all the way to infinity and turns around and comes crashing back through your head and out the bottom and up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and and up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side. And it begins to build, 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 and builds to build until an infinite number of rays fly out simultaneously to infinity and stay there. You are suspended on beams of light, and you are stabilized at infinity. You hang there for eternity at infinity. Then you start to notice little bits of pulses, symbols, and signals, like a web that you are in the center of. Bits of information coming and going from every dimension and every space and time that exists. Every doorway and every gateway and forms and ideas and messages and communications like a giant matrix. You feel the ebb and flow of the infinite possibilities from every space and time, from front and back and side to side and up and down. Clickety-clack, 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 clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clack. Clickety-clack. Now send out one large pulse on every line outward and receive one large pulse coming back like a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And now you're starting to sense a larger infinite mass mind behind this heartbeat, this pulse. It's like a gigantic awareness, one soul, one mind. You are suspended in the center of eternity. Boom, 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 boom. Now, with every heartbeat, a new breath, a new awareness, a new perspective, a new experience, a new sensation, a new dimension. A new galaxy, forever, forever, new, new, new. And now all the beams expand until you are surrounded in a sea of light that is becoming more transparent, until it is like a bubble. But you can still hear it. Boom, 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 boom. You can feel the seed of all that is. And as the blood flows from your own heart, as the seed of the infinite of all that is, on that pulse you are connected from every direction and any direction simultaneously. And every time you remember your heartbeat, you will feel connected to this heartbeat. Be in your perfect place of peace and feel your heartbeat. Now, take a deep breath and feel refreshed, feel loved, and feel energized.
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.